Hi, today is February 17th, 2019. This is Mobile Views Podcast 288. And I was going to spend some time ranting about iOS versus Android apps on Chrome, but John found a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about, so I'll keep my rant to a minimum.
Before we start, we can always rant about other things.
Yeah, before we start, I would like to know something John and I discovered only now. We don't know how long this feature has been there. But at least, and I'll tell you why I went looking for something and found this instead, serendipitously. So I heard that at least the Windows version of Skype, that's a desktop application, not the Windows 10 store version, I think. Or at least the Windows 10 Skype application, or Skype for Windows, has a bokeh feature, which lets you blur the background and keep you in focus. And that's kind of a nice effect, especially if you're in a messy room. But I can't find it on Skype for Mac OS. But what I did find while we're fussing around trying to figure out if this existed was that there is a feature. If you click on the plus sign in the lower right-hand corner of your Skype window, there it's an options list comes up. And one of the options is called subtitles on, or name subtitles on. So I clicked on it to see what it would do. And what it does is real-time speech to text, which is actually reasonably accurate. Not perfect, not 100%, not even 95%, but pretty close to, I would say 90%+ accurate. And so John and I played with it before we started the podcast, and we're both kind of interested and amused by it. We turned it off because it's kind of distracting to see your own words appear on the screen in front of you. I don't know if this is available in Skype for Business. I'm going to go look for it when I get back in on my Skype for Business, but at least Skype Personal Edition, that most of us use, it is there, and you might want to try it, even if you're not hearing impaired, because sometimes if you're on a conference, a group call, maybe you got to tune out for a little while and attend to something else, but then you can see what people said while you're away, which is kind of nice. Or if you got to do stuff like, answer urgent email or something. But anyway,
If you're just really narcissistic, you might also like to see your own words just over and over again.
Yeah, so says the professor of psychology. So, at any rate, the other thing that I wanted to mention is, the thing I was going to rant about originally, I don't know how long I'm going to rant, but let me tell you what happened first. Let me preface it with this. The other day I saw a headline in like Google News or something like that that said, hey, there's some free offers from Google for Chromebook owners. And so I clicked on the Google Chromebook offers website, google.com/Chromebook/offers. And there was a bunch of stuff there, including, some kind of game called Heroes of Roblezia or something. Also, Inkcredible Pro and Note Shelf, and 100 gigabytes of Google Drive, which has been there since day one, at least since I got my Chromebook. But at the top of that Google Offers page is something called Concepts with Essentials, which is, they say, is a normally a $9.99 app. And if you click on the redeem code, gives you a code that you can use to redeem in Google Play and get this, essentially a $10 app for free. Now, the interesting thing is, the offer is for a Chromebook, right? And you have to be on a Chromebook to get that offer redeem code, I think. I think you can't do it from, because it basically wants to check to see what you're running, that you actually have a Chromebook, and, you're just not a regular phone user that wants to get a free app. So I did that, went to and clicked on it, and I redeemed it. And the full name of it is Concept Sketch Design Illustrate. Two things about it. One, for $10, you don't get the full app. As it says on, or at least I don't think you do, but when I redeemed my code, I got what Google says under Offers page, which is it is a basics version, right? Even though it's $10, it doesn't have all the add-ons, which I found kind of annoying. But hey, it was free, so fine. The second thing is, even though it's a Chromebook offer, it's an Android app. As are the other ones. Anyway, I installed it. I played with it. I'll do a little blog item about the Concepts. It's a drawing app. And I have a Samsung Google Chromebook Plus, which has... it's a battery-less but active stylus. included with the Chromebook. So I did a little doodle with it to see how it was to draw. And I have some things to say about it. But I'll say about, I'll talk about it in the blog. It was because John has a lot of stuff to talk about.
Well, I have random things to talk about. Okay. Nothing too much. But yeah. So a couple of things. One thing, I do have a new app that I saw.
Oh, wait. I wasn't done yet. So what I did want to say is the rant part of it is this. If you have an iOS device, if you have an iPhone and an iPad and whatever, there is some, what's the word I'm looking for? There is a common user experience. It's not 100% common because obviously you have different screen sizes and some different features and so forth. But generally speaking, when you use an app on an iPhone, it pretty much works the same way and on an iPad, except on a bigger screen. That's not true when you put a Google app, Android app designed essentially for a phone. I mean, there are some Android tablets, but let's face it, that's a dead platform. And put it on Google's new tablet format, right? Some of you might remember that Google released a, what is it called? A Pixel tablet or whatever they call it last year that has not gotten a good, I don't think it's gotten a good reception by tablet fans like myself. And I didn't buy one because it was so darn expensive and didn't seem to give me anything I really needed that was, you know, better than, say, the iPad experience. But in any case, so the problem is when you run an Android app on Chrome OS, the experience is not good at all. So, for example, once I was in the app, I could not figure out how to get out because there is no virtual home button on a Chromebook, right? So in modern-day Android phones, even though you don't have a physical button anymore, when you tap on a screen or sometimes it's just there by default, there is a button a virtual button, an image on the bottom of the screen. Looks like an elongated white capsule that you tap and it takes you to home screen. Basically gets you out. It is your exit button, right? Takes you back home. There is no such thing as that on a Chromebook, not even when you're running an Android app. And so to get out, I think I had to, I can't even remember now, but I had to use some, you know, key combination to get out of the app, back to Chrome OS, and then kill the app, essentially, you know, to terminate it with, you know.
Extreme prejudice.
Extreme prejudice. Thank you. That's what the phrase I was looking for. So that was kind of weird. Also, I found that even saving a file, which is an export versus a save, and you can export it to either its native format or to like PNG or JPEG or whatever. But anyway, even that, there's such a lag, I mean, like a delay between the time I tapped on the option and something happened that I thought it was broken at first. So, you know, and the thing is, this is a Google-endorsed product for your Chromebook, right? This is not just some random free app or random paid app and say, hey, you know, it's an Android app. I thought I'd try it on my Google Book because, well, I didn't know any better. But this is something Google has actually promoted as its free offer. Oh, and the other thing, and it just, I don't know. It's an interesting app. I'll talk about it more later, like I said, in a blog, as far as it being a drawing app. But it was kind of disappointing in its overall user experience. The other thing that's interesting, and I'm not saying this is good or bad, but I understand it, is when you get an app for an iOS device, whether it's iPad, iPhone, or both, when you get it, whether it's free or paid, or, you know, one of the freebie offers that Apple sometimes provides, where they'll offer a free app, or the manufacturer, the developer, offer it for free temporarily. What happens is that app is available to any other iOS device that you are logged into the Apple Store with on the same account.
Mm-hmm.
This redemption for free app is only good for the device you redeem it on. So in other words, for example, I'm planning to buy another Chromebook soon so I can play with some other things that, like Linux containers, for example, that I'm still not sure what kind of hit it might have on my system resources, especially storage, you know, if I start loading up Linux containers. So I won't be able to take this app with me, for free at least. I mean, I can buy it again. And that's okay. I can understand that. You know, the developers need to make money, and this is a nice teaser for a $10 app. Even though it's not apparently the full app, you still got to buy add-ins to do some things. But anyway, kind of a weird user experience from both point of view of how to use it and and its availability. Although, like I said, I understand the availability part. Okay, not much of a rant, I guess, and I'll talk more about the drawing app later in a blog and maybe next next time when we have a podcast. Okay, so you got stuff.
It's a rant enough. It's a decent rant.
It's a mini rant.
So, first I have an app, sort of an app pick of the week, although it's not an app that everyone can get just yet. So it's a company out there called Circle In. Circle In has a new app for the education space. And this week, one of their employees, their director of innovation, came out to our campus to talk a little bit about it because they just secured about, I don't remember the exact amount, but a sizable chunk, you know, seven-figure grant from the National Science Foundation.
Wow.
To partner with a variety of institutions of higher education, so four-year and two-year colleges, to roll this out to their freshman cohort to see how well it works in terms of improving grades and improving retention. So what it does is I like to think of this as a secondary channel of communication for students. You know, students have our learning management system where activities and assignments and quizzes and discussion posts and all those other things that go into, you know, an online course or a face-to-face course that has online components or a hybrid course, any of those sorts of things. But this is a secondary channel that is more or less completely up to how the students want to use it. So give an example. When this app is built into your LMS, students can log into it. They can upload their notes and share their notes easily through it. They can ask questions amongst each other and answer each other's questions. They can share links to deeper information about things, YouTube videos. They can get one-on-one interactions with each other or with tutors for homework help, things like that. And 80%, 90% of their use is through smartphones and tablets, as you might expect. But the thing that makes it really interesting and makes it very attractive to students is that it's 100% gamified. In a sense that everything you do, you earn points for doing. So if you upload your notes, you earn a certain number of points for doing that. If other people view your notes, you get points for other people viewing your content. If you ask a question and other people answer it, each person that answers it will get some points, and then you can award as the question asker more points to them for the best answer. People can vote on the best answers. So there's really nothing in the app that you do that adds substance that doesn't get you some sort of point merit. And then at the end of the semester, those points can be cashed in through Circle In. They have sponsor offers, so they, you know, can be cashed in for gift cards, essentially. So,
wow.
They were telling us that their highest amount last month or the month before, they actually had a student in higher education, because they also are in some K-12 schools. But they had a student in higher education that earned $175 on Amazon.com gift cards.
Is that for the whole semester?
For the whole semester, they got $175. And they actually wrote to the company and said, thank you for the gift card, because I just used it to buy my books for next semester.
Wow.
So, it's a cool idea, and it really is something. So professors can view it. We can look in and see what's going on. We can't interact in it, which probably is a good thing. It doesn't scare students away, because the second that we start saying this is how you use it or this is what you're going to do with it, the same as any other requirement, it doesn't get done. I thought it was a really neat idea, and it's something that I think our school's going to move forward with partnering with them, and so I hopefully will have more I can update on in the near future.
I have two questions. So I'm at the CircleInApp.com website, and the first thing you see is students use Circle In 23 minutes a day. Why 23 minutes a day?
That's so their analytic data.
Oh, that's the average.
Yeah, that's the average per day use, and they compare that to Facebook and WhatsApp and all that, where your average day, like total time per day, is somewhere around 12 to 13 minutes.
Yeah.
So they're basically pointing out that students are spending a good amount of time in the app, working with each other and trying to go through the material.
Right. And you know, the other thing I noticed, again, on their website, and you mentioned this earlier, that they got a sizable grant. But when you're talking, maybe I wasn't listening carefully, but I didn't know that it was from the National Science Foundation. I thought maybe it was from NEA or one of those kind of places. But it's an NSF grant, which is, I think, kind of unusual, especially size. NSF grant.
Yeah, it's an NSF SBR, so Social Behavioral and Economic Research grant. And SBR grants can run in that size. It's not too uncommon. In fact, I, for a number of years, various portions of my funding as a grad student and as a postdoc came from NSF SBR grants. So they can get quite big, but they're sort of, I jokingly say, in the terms of the federal grant space, they're still the Wild West of grants, where it's basically do it for the science and we're happy. You know, we just want annual reports showing that you're doing
something,
something, and that you're publishing it, and that you're promoting it, that you're getting the news out there about it.
So how does it work with? I wonder how it. I mean, I don't. You might not know, but I just wonder how it works with presumably a for-profit company.
That's the part I find unusual. For-profit companies can get the same same grants if they have the right credentials.
Yeah.
And they seem to have a good idea as a for-profit. They've actually hired most of the people that I've gotten the sense that work for them. They're a small operation. They have a background in the nonprofit industry and world. So
interesting.
It's kind of a cool idea.
Interesting. It's a kind of an academic back channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what one of the concerns that my one of my colleagues had was, well, we should take time. We'd have to teach our students how to use it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, no, in the Web 2.0 world, you let them figure it out.
Yeah.
They will make it work as well as they can. A second we go in and say, here's an assignment you have to do on CircleIn.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, well, this is crap. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So, plus, publishers have tried things like this before, and they just don't work as well when they're very prescribed.
Right. Plus, in a good product, there is no right way to do things. Fact, if your product does not extend itself beyond what the program imagined, it's probably not very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I didn't know people would do that with it. That's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be interested to learn what you think of it as you know, if you guys are actually able to implement it on campus.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're kind of in talks now, so we will see where it goes.
Cool. Okay, so I haven't even read through all of John's talking points here, so I'm just kind of reading them as we talk now. John and I were both furiously typing before we started the podcast.
I was thinking as we were getting ready for our podcast today that there are certain things I don't worry about anymore.
Oh.
That they were pain points 5 years ago, and today they're just they just work, and I'm just happy about it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of came up with my list, and I'll go through mine of things that I don't worry about as much as I used to. And maybe you have some that you realize have gotten a lot better in the last 5 years. I guess technology-wise, everything should have gotten better in the last 5 years, but not always.
Yeah.
So a couple things. Smartwatches have gotten a lot faster. I was looking at some of my old smartwatches yesterday, and I still use old Apple Watch Series 0 at night to record my sleep tracking. And man, my Apple Watch 4 is just lightning fast compared to them. It's not as fast as I want it yet, but it's way better, to the point that I actually think I can use my Apple Watch to do certain tasks that I wouldn't have been comfortable doing on the first-gen Apple Watch or the Pebble. For example, I loaded up an app yesterday called Mini Wiki, which lets you have Wikipedia access through a watch app, which is kind of nice if, you know, you're just sitting there and someone says something and you just casually want to look it up on your watch and get some information without having to pull out your phone and look too distracted. And things like that I don't think we could have done 5 years ago. Things are just way too slow in the smartwatch space, or way too one-directional.
I'm trying to remember what I was using back then. I didn't have an Apple Watch yet. I think I still had my, like, actually I still have it. I think I was still using my Moto 360. Mm-hmm. I think. I have to think about that now. Anyway.
I mean, 5 years would have been 2014.
2014. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I don't, I think I was using my Moto 360. Mm. Yeah.
Bluetooth headsets.
Oh, wait, I want to say something, though. Since you're talking about activity tracking. You know, so I am still using a Fitbit One. Mm-hmm. And the sad thing that's happened in the last 5 years since February 2014, is you can no longer buy a pocketable Fitbit. They only have wristbands now. And I don't want to have two wristbands on my arms because that's weird. Our friend Arnie does it. But an Arnie looks good. On me, not so much. So that's a little bit disappointing. So I can't buy a Fitbit anymore. Or at least the one I want. And I'm not sure what's going to happen when my Fitbit, you know, bites the dust. It's quite old now, I think. Anyway, continue on, John. Sorry.
Bluetooth headsets. For a long time, I had a hard time finding a good Bluetooth headset. Mm. I had the LG Tone series headsets. Those were sort of nice. I had a few Jabra headsets that I really liked. But it just seemed like if you got something small, it had horrible sound, but it was great for phone calls. And if you got something too big, you didn't take it anywhere because it was too big to fit in your pocket. And even the LG Tones, having them around your neck, although I realize in some areas now that is a status symbol to have an LG Tone around your neck, just like AirPods is a status symbol in some cases. I never particularly liked the LG Tone around the neck look. But about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I bought a pair of Beats Solo 3 headset. And a pair of AirPods. They're both they both use Apple's W1 chip, so you pair them to one of your iOS or macOS devices, and all of your devices can then trade off of them easily, which is just killer integration, where I can use them with any device I'm pretty much using. And I haven't had any desire to replace them. AirPods 2, when they come out, I probably will upgrade, just because I hope there's new features I would like, but I don't really have any complaints about Bluetooth headsets these days.
Well, you know, the other thing about Bluetooth headsets is they're if you don't mind the cheaper ones, they're pretty affordable these days. They used to be, mm-hmm. I think, a minimum of maybe $80-$90 5-6 years mm-hmm. ago. And they're, at least the ones I had, are pretty uncomfortable. I think I had a Motorola. It had kind of, it was a behind the ear thing with a connecting plastic rod between them that went behind your neck. It was pretty uncomfortable now that I think about it. you know, both the in-the-ear part and the behind-the-neck part. And we've come a long way. I still don't have an AirPod because I'm still waiting for V2. And I hope it comes out soon because I'd like to join the AirPod generation and become a cool kid.
They are very nice. Just for having in your pocket... that's the other weird thing with AirPods that I realized. So yeah. If I have them in my bag, which I've been carrying a very small bag lately, but if I have them in there, I don't use them half as much as if they're in my pocket.
Mm.
But if I can pop them out of my pocket and just put one in one ear, in fact, the majority of the time I'm only using one of the two AirPods. I just kind of trade off here and there because I want to keep the other ear open.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have them in my pocket, I will just pull them out and use them quite a bit throughout the day. And to the point where I've even read people saying if they get a phone call, the immediate thing they tell someone is hold on, and then they go get their AirPods. They won't even talk on their actual iPhone anymore, just because it's so much nicer to have the hands free. Next thing up, iOS in the last 5 years has gotten a lot more useful for power users. So VPN support enhancements, SSH tunneling, decent apps for niche uses such as mounting TrueCrypt drives or
VNC
connections. Yep, that's the thing now with iOS. There's actually usually an app now for any sort of real niche thing that you're like, I bet there's not an app that can open TrueCrypt drives. Nope, there are two or three that are decent apps that can do that.
So where do you put the virtual file or whatever it is you're using?
You download it into the app's sandbox, so it's not the most ideal.
Yeah,
but
so
it is.
It can't be very big then. Yeah.
No, but you can move the encrypted files here and there. So if you've got, one or two files that you really want to keep encrypted, but then occasionally want to open and reference on mobile, it works pretty well for that.
Hmm.
And it can support fairly large volumes. I've had, slightly under 10 gigabyte volumes that I've transferred over to it, and it can open them quickly and read into them quickly. So wow. That's pretty nice.
That must take a hit on your phone, though, or whatever. Yeah.
Well, if you've got the space.
Yeah.
I have a 256 gig iPad, so
yeah, I guess
it works.
So. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of iPads, they are no longer content consumption only.
Oh, yeah.
When the iPad first launched, it really was not anything like a laptop replacement like it was billed as being.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think you get to a point where I can use it for probably about 95% of my daily computing I could do on my iPad. And I still tell people my best decision I ever made. And if you haven't done this yet, I think you've mostly done it, Todd, but I'm talking to our threes of listeners. if you have not used it to excise paper from your life, just do it, because I used to carry around binders of lecture notes and additional content and all these other things that I would take into a classroom with me. They're all on the iPad now. I look at all my lecture notes directly on the iPad. It's much nicer than trying to figure out where all the papers are and if they're, three hole punched and put in the binder properly, or if they're in the right order and all of those things. It just gets really frustrating after a while.
And, the screens have become so much better in the last 5 years that to do that 5-6 years ago, I think it would have been more difficult. And while you probably already did it, maybe you can tell me for sure, because the screen resolution was a little lower. I think some of the reflectivity of the screen is a little higher. Smudge factor is probably about the same. But I think just having a better physical display helps you a lot, especially since you're reading it reading from it live in class.
Yeah. And it's definitely something that it's been incremental as I've gotten better and better iPads. I've pushed more and more paper away onto them, but really starting with, I guess, the iPod Air or the iPad Air 2 was the first time when I had a decent enough screen, a decent enough input abilities. And then really when I got the first iPad Pro 10.5 before I upgraded to the iPad Pro 11, that really took it to the next level, to the point that if I am between offices now where I've got a computer at both offices, I can still get most of my work done just on the iPad.
And wasn't iPad Air the first iPad with Retina display, or pretty close to it?
Pretty close.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was,
Might have been the first. Yeah. One thing I want to mention about iPads, and I'm a heavy iPad user, is that my, what's the word I'm going to use? I can't use a four-letter word because we rate this PG. But the iPad Smart Keyboard, which, as you know, for me, started falling apart quite early, right after the warranty expired, I think.
Not very smart.
Yeah. So it's when did I buy this, the iPad Pro 9.7? 3 years ago? Probably 3 years ago. The keyboard is no longer recognized by the iPad. So, you connect to it and it says, this is a device not recognized, or this accessory not recognized, and just says no. And I've tried rebooting and cleaning the contacts and all that kind of, usual suspect kind of behavior, and nothing seems to help. So I guess I'm going to have to go buy a new cover, a non-Apple cover. I stopped buying Apple covers because they all fall apart for me.
I just picked up, this is not in the show notes, but it's a related fun aside. I just picked up an OtterBox Defender case for my iPhone 10.
Yeah.
For $12 on eBay.
Wow. That's a good
price.
It
was used, but not very used. So, got to remember, sometimes I think we go on eBay and we find stuff that's new, in box that sellers are reselling. And this was literally someone who just
didn't like
it. They didn't want their Defender case anymore. They didn't use it that much. And so they shipped it off to me, and I'm very happy with it for $12. I've always had a little bit of buyer's remorse with the OtterBox Defenders when I paid $40, $50 for them, because invariably sometimes I start to dislike them and I don't use them, and then they sit in a desk drawer, and I think, gee, I wasted a lot of money on this. But even if I don't use this, OtterBox Defender for more than a few weeks ever, I think $12 is worth it for having the extra protection if I'm traveling or at a theme park or something like that where my phone could drop or fall.
Right. I don't have the Defender, but I bought the OtterBox. I think it's a variant of the Commuter that only Apple sells. You can only get this OtterBox case for the iPhone XS, in my case, through Apple. I don't think you can even get it from the OtterBox site. But I like it, too. It was kind of expensive. It was about $40, but it's been a good case. I have dropped my phone on occasion, I have to admit, and the screen is fine, the innards are fine, so no complaints. Camera's fine. It's a tough phone. Tough phone and a tough... Even though it's not Defender tough, it's pretty tough case, so... And it's not too big, which is important for me. Since, as I've mentioned before, for some reason that drives me bonky, shirt pockets on Aloha shirts in Hawaii are smaller than shirt pockets on other kinds of shirts, even dress shirts. And it is... So, you have to reduce the volume of whatever it is you put in your pocket because there's just not that much to hold. At any rate, continuing on with your list.
Few other smaller things. Companies more and more, I think, cloud experience. So Microsoft, I think, has really kicked it up a notch with Office 365, sure, where all of my documents just kind of sync to where I want them. OneDrive has gotten much better. SharePoint document syncing's gotten better. Modern network-attached storage and sync backup tools, things like Duplicati and Resilio Sync and my QNAP NAS and the Synology NAS family, all those really have made a lot of painful things easier to deal with. So, and even cool stuff like virtualization and containerization. You go on YouTube and you can find all these people that have built test networks at home for, messing around with virtual machines and things like that. That usually costs a good amount of money. However, if you just want a very simple setup, a modern NAS unit that you pick up for, $600 to $800 can actually do a lot of those things with a decent amount of power behind it. So,
yeah, but, isn't that one of the things that has become worse in the last 5 years? And that's four-fee cloud backup services. Didn't you go through like two of them or something?
Well, that have not disappeared? That's why the cloud backup I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah.
But tools like Duplicati and Resilio that let you backup things easily to your own devices, stuff. That's gotten a little bit easier, I think, than it was in the past.
Yeah, but 5 years ago, there was a plethora of, reasonably priced cloud-based backup services. What was it on? Backblaze, maybe? I think it was the first one to go.
Backblaze, Carbonite, Mosey.
Yeah,
Crash Plan. Yep, they're all
gone.
They all kind of went away.
And if you used Flickr for your photo backups, for free at least, that's going away too. So you better get rid of your files because there's going to be a 5,000. Is it that many? Maybe 1,000 photo limit or something like that, which is a lot. It's not a little bit, but still, if you're backing up everything to it, that's not a good idea. So. Cloud backups, that's become a, what's the word I'm looking for? Not a problem. I mean, there's still ways to back things up, like getting Office 365 subscription or buying a Google Drive storage, but it's still not, backing up, the process of backing up used to be easier with those products, right? You install something on your computer, especially, and boom, stuff gets backed up. That's not true anymore. And even at Apple, you have to end up, most of us have to end up paying like $2 a month or something to get additional iCloud storage, and we hope, we hope Apple will not go away anytime soon. But there's a lot of companies we thought would never go away, and they are going away. Things that we never, maybe most of us don't think about, like Payless Shoe Stores is closing all of its stores soon, like 30 days or something. So things that we thought were going to be forever aren't.
One of the other, my next little discussion after this is things that you hope, your pain points that you hope will be gone in 5 years. But my last one of things that have really gotten very nice today is YouTube content. I mean, people have problems with YouTube as a, you know, Google-owned property and things like that. But if you are a nerd for anything educational or enthusiasts, now that YouTube creators can have people subscribe to their channels for paid subscriptions, and, of course, Patreon has been around for a few years now, there really are a lot of very good produced content, to the point that I do not miss cable television or network television at all, because if I want to know about something, I can typically find a well-produced, well-researched YouTube video on that topic made by an enthusiast, not a television producer and a host that were told, oh, this is what tested well, you should write a story about it.
Right.
So that's another thing that I've really come to enjoy over the last few years.
Yeah, what I haven't come to enjoy, and will be gone in like this year, is a non-fragmented video market. I was just, Jay Stone and I, my Comics Use podcast co-host, and I are planning to talk about the implosion of Marvel TV series on Netflix. And from what we can figure, you know, and we're not insiders, but from what we read, I guess I should say, it doesn't look like it's because the shows weren't, you know, playing well to the demographics. It's simply that Marvel, well, Disney really, which owns Marvel, Disney's going to start its own streaming service sometime this year and wants to pull back its properties. And so we're getting, you know, so they're pulling all the movies and TV shows and so forth. I think you'll still be able to watch them for a while. But eventually the movies, especially the Avengers and so forth, Iron Man, will all be gone from the various other services like Netflix and Amazon Prime. And so now I have, you know, I have to have subscriptions. Well, I don't have to, but I want to have subscriptions to Netflix. And Amazon Prime is really, its videos are really a byproduct of wanting to have Amazon Prime, but still, you know, and CBS All Access, which I think I mentioned to you earlier in a couple of podcasts ago, that I finally broke down to watch Star Trek Discovery on it, as well as other stuff, it turns out. And what else do I have? Oh, DC Universe for its video stream. It's becoming way too fragmented. And although it's each individual service isn't too expensive, I'm now paying essentially more than I pay my cable provider for video content. And I still have cable. So, you know, I'm paying probably, I don't know, $80, $90 a month right now in aggregate for everything. And it's going to get worse. I may subscribe to the Disney, whatever Disney's video stream is, because, you know, they're going to have original Marvel content, for example. And I'd kind of like to see that. Original new Star Wars content too, I believe. So, whose property they also own. So, yeah, things are getting worse in some fronts, like video content fragmentation. Okay, but here are the things you think to end it on an up note.
Yeah. So, let's think about the things that we want in the future to be a little bit better, because things that are kind of pain points now.
Yeah.
One is abandoned software in iOS and Android app stores that grow buggy with each new version.
Yeah.
I wish there was some way that Apple would, or Google would, or both would figure out how to avoid that. I tried to mitigate that with one of my own apps years ago. I pulled it when I hadn't updated it over a year because I knew the experience was going to get really painful.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, I have Grand Theft Auto 3 on my iPad Pro, and it hasn't been updated in over a year, and it just glitches out after about 2 minutes of gameplay, which is really frustrating when you want to play the game and you can't play it because the software hasn't been updated. So something that I think...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's something that I know content producers, you know, the game designers are going to have to deal with as well, but I wish there were legacy mode ways for the operating system be like, oh, you know, this app hasn't been updated for 2 years. I should emulate the environment that it's expecting from 2 years ago so that it can still be usable.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my sad story about Civilization Revolution, the first version, which no longer even runs on the 64-bit versions of iOS, which is what, since iOS 11, I guess, became 64-bit only. And so I haven't been able to upgrade one of my iPads because I want to keep playing the game. So I need essentially a 32-bit emulator if support for 30. I don't think it's going to happen, by the way. It won't happen for that one. But it will be cool. You know, they have more power to maybe create a container for these apps to be migrated to or installed in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Next up, things that I would like, transparency and targeted ads.
What do you mean by that?
So we know that we're being targeted.
Yeah.
Just be honest about it. My example of that is about 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. I bought one of these Circle water bottles that I had seen advertised on Facebook a lot.
Circle?
Basically, it's got a little flavor pod that's at the top there, and you can swap it out with different flavors. But the water is clear, you know, it's still regular water. You get to dial in mm-hmm. how much of the flavor you want on it. So I had seen this ad on Facebook for probably 3 or 4 months before I finally thought, okay, you know, it does kind of look interesting. And this is one of those cases where I've tried it out and I actually like it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I've talked to other people and they say, I've never seen that ad on Facebook. Well, yeah, because for whatever reason, Facebook thought I'd like it. So they sent it to me. So good call, Facebook. But why don't you actually come out and say, hey, we noticed you really like these things. And so here's a product you might want to know about versus trying to maintain this sort of belief that, oh, the Facebook ads you see are the same ads that everyone else is seeing. When we all know that is not true in any way at all. So I guess I want just them to come right out and say, look, we know a lot about you. We've picked these ads for you, just like recommendations at a, you know, on Amazon or something like that, versus trying to make it seem like, oh, magically, this was the ad that you got today. It had nothing to do with you as a person.
Right. And as he takes a streak from it.
Yeah. And then I guess my last one is macOS just isn't fun anymore. Apple has been for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, there's been stability fixes, bug fixes, security fixes, a few UI tweaks, dark mode, those sorts of things. But it really doesn't seem like there's any heart left in laptop and desktops being exciting to use or something you would choose to use over iOS or Android. At least Windows 10 gets a few noticeable changes here and there with various iterations and new buttons and things like that. But I really want Apple to step up and give some love to macOS. Those are the things I hope to see in 5 years.
Well, to end your up note on a down note, I think desktop OSs are essentially dead from an innovation point of view. I mean, it's not where the market is moving, right? It's all mobile. So Windows 10 is the same thing, which is why they're never going to change the name, right? It's always going to be Windows 10 from, you know, whenever it was launched till the end of Windows, whenever that is. Mac OS, I think, is the same way. There's very little innovation in any desktop operating system I can think of. By the way, I literally just put in show notes. I was going to go look for a Circle, which is spelled CIRKUL, by the way, on Amazon.
Yes.
And I noticed that there is a ad for a new Amazon smart plug. It is $24.99. Says it's in stock. Kind of expensive, actually, $24.99. But the nice thing about it, looking at its photo, is it's really small. So it'll literally fit in, you know, one of the two plugs on a standard wall receptacle, leaving the other one free for, you know, a non-controlled device. So I thought that was pretty nice. Because the other smart plugs I've bought, and I've bought about 3 different ones now, they're all kind of big. They kind of take over your receptacle, as I recall.
Yeah, the iHome smart plugs that I've been buying are about that same size.
Oh, nice.
And about the same price.
Yeah.
I'm looking them up now. The latest model, the iHome ones, is $29, so it's about the same. But what that does get you is it also will work with HomeKit, whereas the Amazon only works with Alexa and maybe Google Home. But if you kind of like to have things on both Alexa and HomeKit, you're going to want something that's not just purely branded from Amazon.
Okay, and here's something I learned on Amazon as I was looking up Circle, CIRKUL. It is not carried, at least I don't think it's carried. Hang on, let me go look again. Let me search all departments. I think I was looking only in devices. Okay, so it is not carried by Amazon for sale. However, it is apparently in a class of products called fruit water bottle infusers. And so it knows what Circle is, which is sort of, you know your competition. It knows what it is, and there are other brands like Infusion Pro and Hydra-C Fruit Infuser Water Bottle that you can buy that apparently does the same thing, where you can, you know, it has like a little doodad like yours does, where you put the flavoring in, and it lets you have flavored water. It's not carbonated, right?
So the thing that, no, it's not carbonated.
Yeah.
The thing that I think Circle actually got a hit on that was that these little pods, you just change them out completely. So you can buy different flavors, but there's no, you don't have to, like, put in a syrup or, you know, mess around with that. And also, they will sell you the pods on monthly subscription.
Oh, wow.
So you can pick out the ones you like. And I've had this same pod in this water bottle for about 3 weeks, and it's almost empty. So depending on how much flavor you like, I don't particularly like a lot of flavor. I've been able to get a lot of longevity out of one particular pod.
And by the way, interestingly enough, there is a thing on Amazon, Bicircul, spelled the same as C-I-R-K-U-L, but it's an MP3 song called Cockroaches. So there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah, as John takes another hit from his circle. not a cockroach. How much did that cost, John?
The starter kit was $25, okay. And that came with four of the pods, the bottle, the little sleeve for the bottle. It's actually fairly reasonably priced. They say that when you get down to normal use, you end up paying about 50 cents, 40 to 50 cents per fill-up of your bottle to have the flavoring. So, you know, if you're the kind of person that would buy, you know, flavored waters or carbonated beverages or something like that, it saves you money in that way quite a bit.
Yeah, it looks, the other ones look like on Amazon, look like you actually have to put in fruit pulp of some kind. And there's a pulp strainer. It looks a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? Involved.
Yes.
Than yours. Okay, something I should keep in mind. Although it's, a lot of these things don't ship to Hawaii, so we live in a third world. I see fruit punch. Orange, tangerine, black cherry. Those are the three flavors I see on this thing. Interesting. Alrighty, folks. So that is the end of Mobile Use Podcast 288. John and I went a lot longer than I thought. I thought this would be about a 10-minute podcast. But no. As usual, we have exceeded our own expectations. So I hope you found something useful in it. And we will talk to you next time.